To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
You just heard the song, so you know what you're listening to. I'm Don.
And I'm Al.
And I'm Rook.
There you go. So you got three of us
again.
We
did it right.
Hey, we did that in one take.
Yeah. The plan was we were supposed to have all four of us, but things happen.
Yeah, well, again.
So what's been going on?
Thing planned. I was going to sing the whole song and everything. You ruined it, Dallas. You ruined it.
I gotta tell you something, though. My friend, he doesn't like that song.
What song?
Our theme song.
Oh, well, I like it.
He doesn't like it. No.
Tell him to write a better one.
Yeah, come up with a better one. Yeah, whatever. But yeah, so, you know.
Man, can you imagine that? Can you imagine we do different covers for each episode? And a different version of the theme song for each episode.
Or different theme songs. I'll do like a lounge version of it. My friend will play on it, and you know.
Oh, dude, a lounge act version would be.
Yeah, it's like two awesome. Dimension.
That's what I
got two dimension for you, baby.
That's what I wanted to do in the beginning. I kept, when Dallas said he had a theme song, I said every episode you can make it like a polka or like a heavy metal. You know, you can make it like you said, a lounge. And Dallas says, I won't have time to do all that. So we've had the same theme song for 6 years now, which I like.
It's a good theme song. I like it.
I do too. Yeah. And it's ours.
It's fine.
So tell your friend that, you know.
Dallas isn't here.
Yeah.
Maybe next time.
So anyway, all right, well, let's get moving. What have you guys been reading?
I'll go first, I guess. Have we ever talked about Classics Illustrated on the show before?
Yeah, you and I have. Rook, are you familiar with Classics Illustrated?
Yeah, I talked about it before.
Yeah, I just happened to go to the comic shop the other day, and for $2 I got like this Robin Hood.
Nice.
Little Classics Illustrated. It's kind of interesting in the sense that I looked it up, and it said it was drawn by Louis Zansky, but then the art style didn't match. Louis Zansky is some Golden Age artist that did work in the 50s and 40s, but I don't remember him being around in comics in the 60s. I don't know if he went to fine art or whatever, but a good artist. But I'm looking it up and I go, okay. And then I looked it up again and I go, well, Louis Zansky sure looked like Jack Sparling a lot. So I'm like, okay. So I looked on Grand Comics database and it is Jack Sparling. So I guess Classics Illustrated did their 40s versions of the original company, Gilbertson, did their original version of it, and then they updated it with newer artists years later.
Really?
So this is the second version of it, which is kind of weird, because I think they did the same thing with the Three Musketeers, which was the first one. I don't remember who did the first, illustrated the first time. The second time it was George Evans. So it's kind of weird, but I know who Robin Hood is. You know who Robin Hood is. Everybody knows Robin Hood. But I never knew the story, how his origin story. I mean, do you guys know the whole Robin? I mean, according to, you know, this comic book,
anyway, do
you know the whole story about how he became Robin Hood and all that?
I've never read that one.
I've heard like multiple different versions of it.
Well, this one is basically like he's a young guy, and he's going to like a archery contest, and he comes across the Sheriff of Nottingham's scoundrels, and they go, "What are you doing, you know, young man?" He goes, "Well, I'm the best archer. And I'm going to go to the competition." And they go, "Oh yeah, can you hit that tree over there?" And he goes, "Not only that tree, but I'll hit whatever, you know, leaf or whatever you want me to." And they go, the sheriff's men go, "Oh really? You're that good, huh? Well, what about those deer running across? Can you get one of those?" "Sure, no problem." Boom, he kills a deer. They don't show it in the comic book. Then all of a sudden, the Sheriff of Nottingham's guys go, "Oh, you know, by the way, that was one of the king's private deer, so you're going to jail now, buddy, for killing them. And he like, and he takes off because he becomes an outlaw. You know, and that's how he became the outlaw Robin Hood. You know, so it was like, I didn't know that. So he runs back and he tells Maid Marian, who was his old lady. I guess they didn't get married, but they were you know, hanging out. He says, "Hey, I got to go to the woods and hide out because they're going to take my house, my everything, and I'm going to get back at them for doing this crap." You know, so he goes back into the, you know, Sherwood Forest, and he meets Little John and Friar Tuck and all those guys. And, you know, of course they have adventures and stuff like that. And what I didn't realize was, because the reason I read it is because I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning because I couldn't sleep, and they had a black and white Adventures of Robin Hood on TV with Richard Green. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. That's a sign. That's something that tells me I should read this. So anyway, so in the story, I mean, obviously it's a sheriff of Nottingham is the evil, but the evil guy who's out to like screw people over. And of course, Robin Hood robs from the rich and gives to the poor. But here's a spoiler alert that I did not know. And you know, if you don't want to hear about it, at the end, it's like King Richard is a good guy. You know, I thought King Richard was a bad guy and the sheriff was like his henchman. No, the sheriff was the scumbag, and King Richard was like, he kind of went to the forest and pretended to be like a poor person, and he hung out with them, and then they said, "Hey, by the way, I'm King Richard and I like you guys." And he goes, "Well, we're like criminals." And he goes, "No, you know, you're forgiven, everything is cool." You know, and that's the way it ended. I was like, "Oh, that's red. I don't know, you know, okay, cool." Yeah. You know, now the thing is, this book has no credits as to who the writer is, so I have no idea who wrote the story of Robin Hood. You know, I should have looked it up, but I didn't. But yeah, it was kind of fun to read. You know, so it was a remake from '57 with Jack Sparling. So I kind of had a little bit of an enjoyment with that. I learned a little bit.
Rook.
You know, so
Rook.
Well, I know that in different versions of Robin Hood, King Richard is a good guy.
Yeah.
He's supposedly off at the Crusades, and that's why the Sheriff of Nottingham is able to take advantage. The sheriff is supposed to be like in charge while the king's away, and then he screws everything up. So,
is some version King Richard's bad guy or something?
No versions. King Richard's brother took over, is what happened, and the sheriff was the one enforcing everything.
So I mean, this ends right when, like, you know, Richard pardons him, so there's the king. Like, get the sheriff and, like, you know, beat the tar out of him? Or, you know, does anything happen? Or they just go on other adventures? I guess they just go on other adventures. Well,
they arrest the brother and the sheriff of Nottingham and put him away.
Oh, okay.
But most of that stuff is in the regular Robin Hood story. Not always exactly, but what was it? King Richard shows up, and when he comes back, he's disguised, you know, because he's been gone a while. One thing you got to understand about the way it worked when you're royalty, when you left, you had to bring everything with you, because if you didn't, your family would take it, all your wealth and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the game of chess, the king can only go one move, because whenever he goes, he has to bring his whole entourage, all of his wealth, all of his treasure, so, you know, it's cumbersome. The queen can go all the way across the board, because she has the king's power, but she's not encumbered with all the treasure.
Oh.
So that's how it worked anyway, but that's what happened, and his brother was trying to take the kingdom, and the sheriff of Nottingham was always the bad guy, was in it.
And yeah, I'm trying to remember if the brother was involved in this. I'm sure he was, but I don't remember exactly at what part, but I've seen, obviously, like, clips from these movies, but I never sat down and watched it. I know there's a famous one with Errol Flynn from the 40s or 30s, you know, but yeah, it was fun, you know, and the thing about, I read up a little bit about Classics Illustrated. I didn't realize that they started in 1941.
I didn't know that.
By a man named Albert Cantor, who thought it was a good idea, as now that comics are a happening thing, to, you know, do classic stories. So they did Three Musketeers, and Robin Hood, I think, was the third or the seventh one, and so on and so forth. And they kept updating them as the years went on, and I guess the styles went on, and they ended in 67, because what I was reading was, they couldn't get a second-class shipping postage anymore. So, you know, whoever, DC or whoever, like, you know, screwed them out of it. So they sold to some other company. And then, you know, subsequently, they've been reprinted by first comics and others throughout the years. Well, not reprinted, but remade or whatever. You know, didn't they remake them in the '80s and stuff like that with first
Marvel?
Yeah. I remember when you held up the cover. I remember seeing those as a kid, like for like Family Opera or other different little stories and things, but. Not like I remember seeing them on the comic book shelves. I remember seeing them like in elementary school in the library and stuff.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because I was told, a kid one time told me that in his like English class they read the comic book of Jekyll and Hyde instead of the book. I'm going, like, that's kind of a cheat, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like Cliff Notes.
It is, but if you think about it, you got to do anything you can to get these kids interested in reading. Mm. So if the story resonates with them, they'll hopefully go back and find the actual novel and read that.
Well, Cliff Notes was also used as a cause for putting Gilberton out of business, too.
Really?
You know, that was another reason they used for why they gave it up. So, interesting stuff that I never knew, you know?
Marvel, in, I guess it was 76 or 77.
Yeah.
They got a license to Classics Illustrated, but they weren't the... I don't think... They used those old stories from that other company. I think they got their own people.
Yes.
Because I bought...
I remember Filipino artists.
Yeah, Filipino artists. Because I bought Three Musketeers, which I thought was nice. And I remember they had some in school, like you said. I was a freshman in high school, and I saw them in the class. And I read Dracula. And I was kind of shocked at how sexy some of the female vampires were. You know, they were showing cleavage and stuff. I'm like, wow. These are nice. I should have bought more. And but I saw those friends of mine would buy those in like 70, 71. And the printing quality was really poor. It wasn't the same as some of the old ones you showed me before.
Yeah.
There's a film from, I think the 90s called Major League. You know, Charlie Sheen's in it.
Yeah, I remember. I saw it.
And I can't remember the actor's name, but... He was separate, you know, he had a girlfriend, a fiance, or I guess maybe they were even married. But she left him, and he was trying to come back to her. She says, have you ever read a book? So in the movie, they're on the team bus, and he's reading the Classics Illustrated comic books, and the whole team's trading them, and, you know, that was where he was reading the classics, is off Classics Illustrated.
Oh, okay. Pretty cool.
But
yeah, so anyway, that's a little thing I read today. I thought it would be kind of fun to... do something offbeat or whatever, you know. So I think they're probably coming back again. You know, these things never go away. It's always an idea, you know, to do classic stories or whatever.
First,
yeah, I'm looking at a huge, huge library of these things online, too.
There's 167 issues of Classics Illustrated from the original run.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you got, like, the Argonauts, War of the Worlds, Jack and the Beanstalk. They do Classics Illustrated Junior. So
yeah, Kirby worked for him. Gray Morrow,
yeah, I've seen Lee
Crandall, George Evans, you name it. All the EC guys. When EC folded, got gigs there because it was a paying gig. You know, I mean, it was like, okay, 10-page story, whatever they pay me, good. I'm 50, you know, $25 a page. All right, I'll take it.
I didn't know that they redid the
for a week. You know, that's cool.
I didn't know that they redid the stories. That's the one that blows my mind. They redrew the stories later, or retold them.
I know those two were redrawn.
Yeah.
Robin Hood was redrawn, and the Three Musketeers. I'm sure there was other ones. There's one of them that was drawn by Matt Baker. I can't remember what it was, but it was beautiful. I can't remember what it was.
That
I know
was
Graham
the first,
Ingalls.
That was First Comics.
Yeah. Yeah. That, oh, really? Okay.
That All was right, First yeah. Comics that they were doing in the 90s. They had a bunch, because I got Moby Dick. Bill Sienkiewicz did it, which I thought was nice. Rick Gehry did several of them. I had those. What was it? They used Mike Ploog. He did Tom Sawyer and a couple of others. They had a whole slew of them, but they were done like in that Dark Knight format, you know, the square bound, you know.
Yeah, they were smaller. They were smaller. They looked like Cliff Notes. Kind of, sort of, you know?
Oh, yeah, like the mini comics, like in the He-Man stuff.
Yeah, I remember using Cliff Notes in high school, and, like, you know, I didn't work for me. You know, I didn't want to read the whole book, so, you know.
Cliff Notes never worked for me because all my teachers had already read the Cliff Notes, so they knew exactly what they said, so you couldn't get away with using them.
Yeah,
I know. So they must have been for dumb teachers to get away with.
I never used them. I never quite understood them. But I remember when I was in college, they said, don't use clip notes in one of the classes. It says, they don't give you the whole story, nor are they accurate. And what was odd was they sold them in the campus bookstore.
Yeah, go figure.
Go figure, right?
Yeah, see that?
You can buy this in the store. Don't use it.
Yeah, there's tons of them. Not only that, but Dell Comics in the 50s and 60s did like stuff like Jason and the Argonauts 2 and Hercules and Helen of Troy. They did movies, basically, you know. But sometimes they coincided with, you know, the classics. I think they said the last new Classics Illustrated original run story was Faustus. I guess that guy sold his soul to the devil or something.
Yeah, Faust.
Faustian.
Yeah.
That was the last one they did. And then that was it. They sold out to somebody. They got their postage pulled by DC or whoever the distributor was.
I think everybody lost that by that time.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah,
because that's why they had those 2-page text stories, and the books.
That's right.
They could get the pub. You know, get that. A lot of people don't know this, but Martin Goodman had Stan Lee write those for Timely. Stan Lee had to write those 2-page stories, and they say that's one thing that helped him. He wanted to be a writer before he went to Marvel. From what I've always read, it was in that Marvel Comics The Untold Story. He wanted to be a regular writer, you know, a prose writer. But his family had him enter the business. But Martin Goodman had him write those 2-page stories and all the cowboy stuff and all that. And that's where he started kind of, you know, developing a style. But all the comics had those 2-page stories so they could get that second-class printing. And then at one point, which is what you're talking about, they decided to pull it. So it kind of became a letters page.
Yeah, you had to have X amount of words in order to get your second class shipping or something. But anyway, that's my little bit. So who's next? Great album, by the way. Who's next?
Right.
I've been actually rereading the Justice series from DC. So I don't know if you guys have either of you ever read that.
Well, could you hold it up so we know what you're talking about?
Yeah, sure, if I go get it off the shelf.
Well, just tell us about it.
Is it Justice or Injustice?
Justice. The Injustice storyline follows, like, the video game with that. But the actual, like, Justice series, where several superheroes are recruiting... Earth is destroyed by nuclear Armageddon. Justice League fails. It's pretty neat. It's an out there series. It's of course one of the Elseworlds series, so you don't get it falls out of all the typical DC diatribes and everything. Yeah. So they get a little loose with some of the ideas and concepts and things. So. They end up, it's a 3-part series, if I remember right. It's 3 different volumes. I only just started the first volume, the other day. But I'm trying to remember if they end up fixing things or if they end up just screwing things up worse. If I remember right, they end up just screwing things up worse. And it's one of the few DC, like, Elseworlds series really have this horrible habit of fixing everything when it's all done, like, you know, it's a screwy timeline, but we're just gonna put it all back into order. But this is it's written by Alex Ross and Jim Kruger, with, of course, Ross doing the art, along with Doug, you guys know how sucky I am at names.
Dougie Braithwaite.
Braithwaite, yeah, that's it. So, yeah, so, you know, it's got good art in it. It's a fun read. So
you said Ross. Is it Alex Ross?
Alex Ross.
Wow.
Yep. He just does the covers, right?
I think he does the colors and Doug does the interiors. Hmm. But Ross writes it too. So.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's just nice to see DC. If I remember the storyline right, it's been years since I read it. If I remember the storyline right, this is one of the few Elseworlds stories that doesn't end like, you know, happy, happy ending and stuff. This is one of the ones that they actually like, okay, yep, well, we screwed up and whoops, we screwed up again. There goes everything. So, you know, I just, you know, I dig the Elseworlds stuff. I just don't like the fact that in the end with a lot of it, they just kind of bring it all back around again. And it's like, okay, you know, it's normal still. Everything's still fine.
Wow. You know, it's funny you mention this because there was it was one of my favorites. It was a 6-issue series. It's by Sergio Aragonés and Mark Evanier called The Mighty Magnor. It came out when they were doing that Death of Superman with DC, and Malibu had an advertising campaign. It says, "Now that Superman's finally dead, you can read this." And they had one of them. One of them was The Mighty Magnor. And it was basically these two guys, one was a writer, one was a cartoonist, and they were trying to do a funny animal comic books. And they kept bringing it into the publisher, and the publisher would just, you know, he was a real tyrant, and he would just look at it, "This is garbage. Why are you wasting it? Don't you know you cut down trees for this stuff?" And all they wanted was superheroes, you know, like the comics industry. And then next thing you know, this alien comes down to Earth, and all these things happen, but the alien is living with these guys. They use him as a model, you know, drawing him as a superhero, and he becomes a superhero. And all through it, the police, the fire department, they're all getting upset because he's destroying the town, even though he stops giant robots that are being sent, you know, for invasion forces. He's doing all the tropes, like, you know, what Batman and Superman says, the Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. And it's really funny and out there, but the police are upset because they can't, you know, do any of the forensics. They can't fingerprint. They don't have any witnesses. All he's doing is destroying property. And that's the first time I remember ever seeing that, where superheroes are actually a fly in ointment. They're not fixing things. They're making it worse. So it needs to be reprinted because nobody seems to know about it but me.
Yeah, yeah. This is pretty much along the same lines. It's the villains are banding together to kind of save the Earth, which seems really strange to say. But and of course, you know, the good guys are like, "Yeah, you're full of crap. You're not actually doing what you think you are." So it's a bit of a role reversal storyline, but. Like I said, in the end, I think if I remember right, in the end, everything just gets completely screwed up and, you know, everything just falls apart.
Well, all right, the one I've been reading, which is funny, because Rook and I are doing a show, so of course, I'm going to talk about Superman. I went to the bookstore, I had nothing in my box. And so I ended up, the cover caught me. It was Action Comics 1006 by, this is Bendis, Suk, and Anderson. It's Brian Michael Business. Ryan Suk was the artist, and Brad Anderson was the colorist. This one actually kind of surprised me, because Superman... It starts out with a mayor in New York, and he's having a press conference. He's sitting there with a bunch of kids, you know, and taking a picture. And then Clark Kent comes up and starts asking questions. And he says, "Can I get a reaction to the report that you told the fire department to shut down the investigations of the growing number of building fires in the city?" And the mayor's like, "Who said I said that? Anyway, these people are yelling, you got to make an appointment, Kent, you know this." Anyway, when they take off, you know, he's a complete politician. When he takes off, Clark Kent's using the super hearing, and it has a whole conversation. So he's writing a story following that. That kind of surprised me. Anyway, it goes through, and that's one thing the mayor keeps bringing up, was whenever Superman gets involved, He says, let the real people do it. We got a police force to take care of it. You got this. You're not doing this. He goes into the newspaper. He fought some creature called Red Cloud, and I guess she beat him. Anyway, it shows up. She's trying to kill this fire chief, you know, which is, I liked it. I liked the artwork. I thought the story was different. And, it ties up. There's some other characters, and it has a surprise ending to it. You know, I mean, continuation, but the issue ends on a note, and I'm like, well, I didn't expect to see that. So, anyway, I was surprised I liked it so much. I went back to the store and bought two more issues, but I haven't read them yet.
Now, is that something
that's brand new?
Go ahead.
Is that brand new?
Yeah, yeah. Action Comics 1006. You know, Brian Michael Business came back to, or he came to DC and he took over Superman and Action Comics. And when I'm saying this and talking about it, I liked it. I didn't love it, but I was interested to see two more issues and see what was going on. But our friend Mark Chiray wrote me a letter. And he says, Brian Michael Bendis has destroyed the Superman titles. Between the fake Batman wedding and the end of Mr. Miracle, Tom King is dead to me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, it's not just him. A lot of people are saying that, yeah.
But when DC announced it is publishing a book about Superman-type character teaching Jesus Christ to be a superhero while being roomies, the book is called The Second Coming. I'm not a super religious man, but you've got to be kidding me. So I'm done with DC.
Yeah, it's their new Vertigo line.
Oh, is that what they're doing?
Yeah, they're doing new Vertigo books.
Oh, see, I thought he was talking about Superman, but he's talking about another book. Well, no, he did say he destroyed the Superman titles. I read the first Superman book he did. I bought it because it had a really awesome Adam Hughes cover, and I liked the interior artwork. We talked about the show. I liked it. I didn't buy any others, but, you know, I enjoyed the one issue. The Action Comics actually kind of surprised me, because even though it is Superman, Clark Kent's a major character in it. I mean, you can see he's not Superman just kind of playing this milquetoast character. He has a stoop to him. I mean, you don't really confuse him with Superman. But he is a good Wiley reporter. And I thought, well, this is really interesting how he's doing this. Like I said, I went back about the two earlier issues to see what was going on beforehand. I don't know if I'm going to buy any more, but I kind of liked them. You're talking
who drew
about
it?
Ryan Sook.
Okay. Sure.
But you know, that Mr. Miracle, Dallas and I were reading that. It was 12 issues. He did a series, Tom King did The Vision, which is a series I really liked. I thought that was interesting. Mr. Miracle, he was writing that. I really liked the artist for it, and I thought, okay, I like Mr. Miracle. The artist is good. Let's try it out. A lot of hype over it. You know, you read all these blurbs saying this is going to change comics and this and that. I liked it enough. You know, Dallas and I talked about the show. Mark Chiray bought it. You know, this is the early issues. And he said, I don't know what I think about this. I felt kind of bad, you know, kind of glowing about this book. Because he really didn't care for it. Well, I followed it all the way through. There was interesting things. But when it finished, the 12th issue, I thought, honestly, I read this for 12 issues and this is it? There was, I don't know, it's like listening to that symphony of Bolero, just all the way through, that's all that happens, and it's no payoff.
Well, it kind of does build to a big crescendo, but yeah.
Well, it's sort of. I mean, there was things, elements about it I thought were interesting, I liked. I was kind of amazed how they did some of it. But half the time, I just thought, really? This is it? I don't know. Like I said, I bought them. I don't hate them. I wanted more. So.
Did you ever hear Beck's Bolero? Jeff Beck's Bolero? It's pretty damn good. It was produced by Jimmy Page.
Yeah, I think I have heard that.
It is really cool, but, you know, that's a mini version. It's only 3 minutes, so no, it's not gonna.
One thing about the Bolero Symphony, I was talking to my brother, who is in the Philharmonic, and he said, when we were talking about Bolero, I said, that's one thing I just never could get a taste for. And I said, countless guys I went to school with had it, and my brother started laughing because of that movie 10 with Bo Derek. Because, you know, she played it in the movie, and that was her favorite part. And I said, yeah. And he said, he doesn't like the recordings, but he said he's played it several times. And he said, if you see it being played, it's a different experience than actually listening to another record. And he said, it is monotonous and kind of understated. But he says, if you're actually seeing a good orchestra play it, he said, there's that one part where it just pays the whole thing off. He says, but it's lost on a record. Nevertheless, I won't be going to see it. So I'll never know.
Well, you know, all the old rock stars swipe stuff from classical. Like a Black Sabbath, some of the riffs are taken from the Planets. I forgot who made that music, but Mars, version of the Planets, has got like that Black Sabbath riff is in it somewhere.
Holst wrote it.
More trivia for you coming up.
Well, even the new stuff, even like EDM and things like that, they're big borrowing and stealing from classical music. So.
Oh yeah.
There's only so many.
You steal from classical because it's public domain, so you're not going to get. But when you steal from like blues, some blues guys will sue you.
Well, what is this new band? I keep Greta.
Yeah,
Greta
yeah.
Van.
Oh no, now you're killing me. Now I'm getting
what the crap. Greta
Van Fleet.
Fleet. That's it.
Greta Van Fleet.
I honestly thought it was a... Do you remember back in the day in Tampa we used to have, like, a newscaster, like Greta Van Susteren or something like that?
It used to be on Fox, too, yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
I seriously thought that's what people were talking about.
Me, too. You know, I just thought that.
Like, people were going on and on about this crap, and they're like, oh, the music. I'm like, isn't that, like, a newscaster? Yeah. Shows you
it's
how...
It's like Zeppelin.
Yeah. Yeah, they totally do. Not only do they sound like it, but they even modeled their logo after Zeppelin. Have you seen it?
No.
I mean, seriously, they've modeled their logo after the Zeppelin logo. They're just ripping off Zeppelin left and right. I don't know how they're not getting this crap suit out.
Well, you know, Zeppelin's got so much money, I guess they don't care, you know.
Everybody,
you got all the cash, you're not going around suing people. You know?
I'll sue them on Zeppelin's behalf and keep the money.
Get in line with, like...
We can all do it together. The three of us can split the money.
Get in line with Spirit, who tried to sue him for that song that sounds like the intro to Led Zeppelin, the Stairway to Heaven, and they lost.
That was a stretch. I'm sorry, at Tarkus, that was a stretch.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to give it a shot anyway.
They should have been taken out of court and beat senselessly for them. And I like Spirit.
Well, Randy California died, so they can't do that to him. He died heroically, too, saving his son from drowning. So.
Really?
Yes, he did. He died saving his son from a rip current or something in the water. Yes, he died heroically. So.
You know, he played guitar with Jimi Hendrix in a band?
Yeah, Jimi Hendrix wanted him in his band, but his mother wouldn't let him go or something.
Yeah, well, because Chas Chandler, when he was putting the band together and taking Jimi to England, Jimi wanted Randy California to come, too. And I was surprised when I tell people that, except for Al, people are like, what? You know. So, anyway. Yeah.
So, anyway, enough of that.
You know, I got to tell you guys, you guys glossed over this Second Coming comic book.
Did you buy it?
It's not out until March. But I'm definitely going to buy it. You know, written by Mark Russell, art by Richard Page. The cover by the one and only Amanda Connor. Witness the return of Jesus Christ as he's sent on a most holy mission by God to learn what it takes to be a true Messiah of mankind by becoming the roommate with the world's favorite savior, the all-powerful superhero, Sun Man, last son of Crispex.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, National Lampoon did Sun Oh God comics back in the 70s and... They couldn't even come close to the you need to look at Son of God comics, drawn by Neil Adams, by the way.
I've seen them. I've seen them. Yes. Fantastic.
Well, is this supposed to be funny? Is it tongue-in-cheek, or is it for real?
No, it's blasphemy.
it says for mature readers.
I don't know about the new one.
Yeah, well, this new one, it's, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be. It just says mature readers, Vertigo, issue number one. Who knows? I mean, you may get like a little bit of shock and awe here. You may get a little bit of a blasphemous humor. Either way, I think I'm in.
Okay. I remember in Son of God comics and National Lampoon, Mary is walking through the park, and all of a sudden, this pigeon with a halo on his head flies up and goes up her dress, and then she becomes, you know.
Oh, man.
That was the 70s, my friends. That was the 70s.
It's been a long time since I've seen those. I'm pulling those up online.
That was on the newsstand right next to, Savage Tales and, Creepy and Eerie. Right next to it. You can buy it, no problem.
Oh, man.
Those were the days. Anyway.
Well, all right. Well, on that note, let's take a music break.
Oh, good.
You can hear our most recent 20 episodes on iTunes. If you would like to hear our older episodes, you can find them on our blog. Just go to bunchofdorks.com and click on the Cyclops.
Your Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.
Hey, this is Dallas, and that song you just heard is Someone Else's Hat by David Maksimicic. That's spelled M-I-C-I-C. I had to look that up just to find out the pronunciation. The album is called Who Bit the Moon? And I love this album because it's linked thematically by music. As opposed to a concept album by, say, Rush or Coheed and Cambria, where the music's usually linked by lyrics and a specific story, this one's held together by repeating guitar riffs or motifs. Musical motifs are recurring notes, or riffs in this case, that give songs a thematic identity. I'm paraphrasing the textbook definition here. Trent Reznor did this with a recurring motif in his Downward Spiral album, way back in 1994, which, incidentally, was my first compact disc I ever owned. Anyway, I love the idea of musical motifs. They're most recognizable in film these days, and usually in the form of leitmotifs. Those are recurring musical phrases that are associated with a person, a place, or even an idea. The first ones that come to mind are by John Williams. He does this in a spectacular fashion in the Star Wars films, obviously. Luke has his own leitmotif or theme song, and so does the Empire in the Imperial March song. Han's got his own, Leia has her own, even Rey in the new films. Ramin Djawadi uses leitmotifs to musically explain each of the major houses in Game of Thrones on HBO. The Starks have their own bittersweet theme, the Baratheons have a stoic song, the Lannisters have a triumphant yet downbeat theme, etc., etc. If you guys like the musical break in this episode, you can find David Maksimicic's entire catalog on Spotify and Apple Music, and I highly recommend it for guitar fans. He introduces some really great licks on the Who Bit the Moon album. All right, that's all from me. So back to Al, Rook, and Don.
You know the song, the Frank Sinatra classic, My Way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. The original lyrics were written by David Bowie. Did you know that?
What?
Yes. Okay. Check this out. I'm glad you guys didn't know this because this is bizarre. It's on YouTube. You can watch it. That song, the music, was originally a French song. It was a great tune. So the publishing company said, hey, you know, we want some American or some English person to sing it. So Bowie was working for a publishing company. He said, hey, can you come up with some lyrics and sing it? So Bowie goes like, yeah, I came up with the worst lyrics in the world. And he actually sang it. And there's a demo of it out there somewhere. But when they got it, Bowie said, okay, so one day Bowie's sitting there listening to the radio, and he hears Frank Sinatra singing that music, and it's not his lyrics, and he goes, what the hell is going on here? He goes, I didn't write those lyrics. The lyrics were given to Paul Anka to write, and that's like the song My Way that you know now. But it keeps going further into the rabbit hole of weirdness. I didn't know this either. On the album Hunky Dory, the song Life on Mars, you know that song?
Yeah.
That's kind of a revenge on My Way because it's a similar tune, and it's like Bowie kind of trying to like, okay, fine, you got a hit with it? Well, I'll get a hit with this song too, you know what I mean? So there's a very interesting little bit of trivia that I watched on YouTube yesterday. So there you go. That was it, my David Bowie trivia. That's a great song. Both are great songs.
Well, I was going to say I didn't know that, but I'm disappointed to find out that it was Paul Anka and not David Bowie.
Paul Anka wrote better lyrics, I think. Bowie's weren't good.
Even he said he did that on purpose.
No, I think that was the best he could do. It was before he was anything. It was when he was a starting out guy.
Hmm.
You know, 60s. 68, I think it was. I didn't know the music was a French song, but they played the video of a guy singing it in French, you know, and I was like, well, that's a great tune, but we want to use it and make it into an American hit. So there you go. That's my trivia. That's my Bowie trivia. So
wow. And apparently you can actually hear the original version of My Way sung on YouTube.
Yeah, I'm sure you can.
Wow.
It'll be on the blog as soon as you send me that link, Rook.
I will get that done. Let me confirm that it actually is that first. So, but that's what it's claiming. That's what it's claiming to be.
There's a video they showed of a guy on French TV singing in French, obviously, that music. And then they had some audio of Bowie singing it, and he was like, oh, wow, I can't believe somebody used this demo, because they used it somewhere or another. Well, they used to do that back then. It was really weird. My friend got a CD of this, but I had seen it online before. Back in the 60s, or maybe 69 or 68, Liberty Records is some cheapo record company. They wanted to put out like a greatest hits album or like a KTEL album, but they didn't want to pay the artist. So what they would do is they would hire like a musician to do all the mm-hmm. songs. Where there's one of them where the hits of 1969, the top hits, are all sung by Elton John. And that is out there. You can find that.
Really? Oh, man. Yes. That'd be a great find.
Sings whatever songs they were. I don't remember exactly what it was. But yeah, there's all sorts of weird crap out there that you never even knew about, you know, thanks to YouTube. So thank you, YouTube.
Yeah. Well, let's like some of the pieces in my vinyl collection. I had a I thought I had gold. I thought I was sitting on like the coolest thing ever. Come to find out, I had a Hank Williams Sr. vinyl.
Yeah.
With no copyright dates on it. And I'm thinking to myself, I've got vinyl gold right here. This is going to be awesome. I brought it in. Turns out it was a bootleg. And apparently the guy at the record store told me this. Bootleggers back then believed that if they made it and they didn't put dates on it, they could get past the copyright laws. How dumb is that? But here I am thinking I've got, you know, record gold here, and nope, turns out it's just a damn bootleg copy.
Well, it's probably a good record anyway.
Oh yeah, it's a great record. I mean, but it's just not worth what I had hoped it would be.
Well, it's probably worth a few bucks, you know, some hand collector might want it, who knows.
Oh yeah, no, some rabid collector would probably want it, I'm sure, but you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I found out that I have still the Beatles Yesterday and Today, and I was always hoping that it was a Butcher cover, but a guy on TV, on YouTube, said, if it's got a certified gold record label on it, it's not a Butcher cover. I'm like, oh, well. Yeah. I'm going to rip mine up. You know, I can just leave it intact or whatever. So, but he said he found one at a flea market, and he found it for like a dollar, and now it's like a, you know, whatever it's worth now, $1,000 or something, whatever.
Yes. Yeah, we had some friends who, when they got ready to move, they went into the shed outside, the shed that had been leaking for, you know, 10 years, and found
the comic books,
all of the original Beatles vinyls.
Oh.
Yeah.
You got them?
No, they were trashed. They were absolutely destroyed. They've been sitting, they were stuck together, the paper had rotted off of them. Yeah. It was heartbreaking to see them. And I'm looking through them and everything, and I'm like, well, you guys did have $1 million. Yeah. And the guy looks at me and goes, what, really? I was like, no, not literally, but you know, you had a lot of money here.
Oh, yeah.
at one time. They were like the wife's mother's records.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I remember when people used to put stuff in sheds. Well, they still do. I got a lot of my collection at public stores, so that's not like a shed. Anyway, I remember kids having comic books in sheds, and they would have them with the bug sprays and all the odors. So
yeah.
you get the comic book from them, and it kind of had that funky smell to it, but it does bring back memories if I ever see one. Oh, man.
You can read a comic and get high.
Smell to it. That's awesome, you know? The kid did give me some great comics. He gave me some like old Doom Patrols and Enemy Aces and whatchamacallit, Challenger. So I didn't care if they smelled, you know, it was great comics, you know, whatever.
Well, that's like all the comic books I got off of my mother-in-law. She had those sitting in like a wood shack shed. Mm-hmm. Like it was an actual house, but it was like, we would consider it a shed because it was like a wooden shack. And apparently the roof collapsed in on part of it and the rats got in. And they destroyed a bunch of stuff, but this was the stuff that was actually salvageable. That's where I got a lot of those like, creepies and eeries and stuff that I had. Yeah, I got those. Yeah, but.
You got to put them somewhere. You know, if you can't fit them in your room, you got to put them in the shed or throw them out in the garbage.
Yeah.
I still dream of one day, like, driving around and seeing comics in the garbage and going, like, oh, my God, look at that. I got to go get them. You know, I guess the closest thing you can do to that is going to a yard sale and finding some rare comics, and some old lady goes, oh, man, my son had these when he was a kid. I guess they're worth, like, about 50 cents each or something. You know,
It's like, here's $50, lady.
Yeah, here's $50. You know, I'm out of here.
Well, now that we're talking about trying to store your comics and everything, one past episode, Rook was talking, and he asked for ideas about curating his collection. Well, our friend Mark Charay wrote, this is a while back, he says, tell Rook, this is how you curate a collection. Take your collection out of the equation. Pretend you're going to build a collection for someone else who is starting from scratch. Runs on a title or character, does this person need to read? What is the best of the best? Once you've created that, apply it to your collection. Everything not on that list has to go.
Okay.
And then it says, he went on and says, and make sure that what goes, you send to Don so he can go through it too.
That's funny. That's one way to look at it. I still haven't curated anything lately, and yet, well, I have one bit of good news, good but bad. I found out that the Scooby-Doo Apocalypse book is being canceled.
Yeah.
Actually, all of the Hanna-Barbera books with DC are being canceled. Yeah. So that's at least one less book I need to figure out where it can fit in the collection, but. It's just, I mean, what do you let go to? What do you let go of? You know, that's, you know, it's something I need to deal with here soon, because I'm really running out of space over here. So I feel like I've confined myself with these two filing cabinets now. So I kind of want to stay within that confines.
Well, DC's cutting back on all their titles, I think. Like in half, I think they're cutting down or something.
You know, from what I've seen with the new DC stuff, I don't think some of it's doing well, personally, my opinion. I don't think it's coming off well. But I'm hearing and reading online that it is, that, like, they're actually doing pretty good with their sales and stuff, which they desperately needed to. Mm. So, I don't know. I got caught up in the whole, like, you know, rebirth cycle and got burned out on that thing real quick, but
rebirth, the new 52, you know, whatever, you know.
One thing, exactly.
And I hate to keep bringing Mark Charay up, but every time he and I talk, he always says Rook gave up too quick on rebirth, because he said,
I know, and you say that to me every time rebirth gets mentioned in a conversation.
Well, he says this in a nice way, but he said he understood, because he kind of felt the way you did. But when he talks excitedly about all the things that happened in it, and I guess it was worthwhile.
Yeah. I guess in a way, I anticipated them getting to the Watchmen stuff sooner. It's kind of sad, because I'm so hypocritical on this concept. How many times have I talked about how bad it is that these companies don't give us any breather room in between events, but yet then here I am talking about, like, I expected them to get to the event sooner. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm a hypocrite. What can I say?
You know, okay, leading into that, when they announced the prequels to the Watchmen? Before Watchmen.
Before Watchmen.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it was my feelings. In a past episode, a really early episode, Alan and I talked about it, because I was thinking, this is horrifying. It was just, why would you do this? And, you know, they always said that Paul Levitz, every time this came up, he says, no, it's not to be touched. Well, when they restructured DC and Paul Levitz is no longer in charge, you know, Warner said, we have this, why are we using it? Well, I was shocked when they showed the covers in the creative teams. I thought, well, this is impressive. And Darwin Cook was kind of overseeing the whole project, which was the last person I would have thought would be involved in it. I come to find out, Darwin Cook said, he said when they brought it up to him, he says, oh, no, I won't do that. That's sacred. But he said later, after he was off the phone, he thought, well, you know, I could do something with this. So he did. He wrote one book with, I think, Amanda Connor. Was that the woman?
Yes.
And then he wrote and drew Minutemen. And I know Dave Gibbons wasn't happy. And I know Alan Moore basically just said, if you do read this, that's fine, but please don't read any more of my work.
And yeah.
You know, which, that's fine. He said, but he asked, you know, if he, you know, not to read it. Well, I never bought them. One thing, though, there was a podcast called Around Comics. And one of the guys in Around Comics and another guy from, I guess, in Georgia or South Carolina, they started doing that podcast. And what they were doing was they were reading all the Watchmen titles and talk about them. And that was interesting because the Comedian series, I didn't see that one coming. I thought this is, I mean, I say this, Alan Moore didn't do it, but a lot of times when somebody does work that's not the original creator, you can tell where it's going. It's always the same tropes. You know, it's kind of unpredictable when the original creator comes up with it. And this one, it hit me for a loop when they were just talking. I never would have bought that book anyway. But when I heard the idea, I said, well, that's interesting. Anyway, the reason I'm talking about this was I found an issue of Minutemen in the Dollar Box years ago. I think it was the last issue of the series. And, it wasn't the last one, but I remember picked it up and reading it. And, like I said, I like Darwin Cook. I found it for a dollar. Okay, so I cheated a little bit. But I was shocked when I read that, how the story went. And even though you kind of come up with your own ideas when you read The Watchmen and you read about the Minutemen and what happened, and you read Night Owl's book, Under the Hood, and he talked about some of these ideas, and I thought, wow, he went the other way. Well, I found another one in the Dollar Box. This is the sixth issue, which is the last one. This ties in, you know, how he got the auto shop, you know, all the things that happened to him when he's writing the book. I'm not going to buy these. If I find them in a dollar box, I'll read them. But I'm going to say, Darwin Cook really did a good job on this. And even though I'm still against the concept, I'm being a hypocrite, like Rook said, it's clever.
It's kind of like a train wreck, you know. You know you shouldn't watch, but you watch anyway. So, yeah, I get the idea of wanting to read them just to see what they did with them.
Well, you did buy them for a while at the beginning. You were buying those titles.
I got, like, one or two.
Yeah.
I didn't get very many of them. Because I just, like, in the first couple of reads, I just really didn't see their relevance. I didn't see, you know, with the original creators not involved in it, you know, like at the time, I was naive enough to think, okay, this might be cool. Let's see what happens here. And then as soon as I read them, they just had the wrong. They read wrong.
I got you.
To me, they just read wrong, and they just didn't work right. So I gave up on that pretty quick. And I honestly, you can tell me what's one of the greatest books ever written. I probably would never read it. So.
Well,
I don't care for it.
I'm saying that everything you said I agree with, but at the same time, think about it. I just talked about Superman. Original creators aren't doing that anymore. They were cheated. I mean, and I'm still reading the book sometimes. Yeah,
They got it right. They fixed their mess up with those original creators. It took a very long time, but it's just. I don't know. Watchmen should have been what it is, a one-off storyline. Outed and when asked about all the stuff with Watchmen, I don't want money. I just don't want this to happen.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm paraphrasing probably, but, you know, I remember him.
You're breaking up, dude.
Saying, you know, is that any better?
Yeah. Yeah, you're good enough. Okay. See, I finished that last train of thought. You said Alan Moore said he doesn't want money.
He doesn't want money. What I want is this not to happen. You know, and that should say a lot. You know, when the creator he said his piece, he did his piece, and you know, I don't think it needs to be regurgitated over and over again. And unfortunately, it's comic books is an industry that does that. They regurgitate over and over. You know, there's very few people in the comic book industry that have original ideas. And when they do, the industry beats them to death.
Well, yeah, but you know, it's not just comics. You are 100% right, but we were just talking about music. You know, basically, when I say this, people argue with me, but I don't really think people really create out of thin air. I think basically you're just taking things you saw when you were younger or things that you just see. And the really good ones are putting a whole bunch of different influences in it. It's not just one or two. Like we're just talking about that band that looks and sounds like Led Zeppelin, even the logo.
Yeah.
But you know, Led Zeppelin took from a lot of places. You know, they made themselves unique.
But now wait a minute. Are you telling me that comic book we talked about, The Second Coming, with the Star Man or Sun Man character, you're telling me that that's not an original concept?
That writer probably was.
I mean, come on, he's the last son of Crispix. Yeah, that's obviously an original concept too.
Yeah, okay.
I do believe that things do come out of thin air. I've seen too many videos of musicians saying that, like, they just sit at a guitar and start playing, and all of a sudden a riff starts developing, and then they start, okay, what am I going to sing? And they come up with a line, finish off a song.
I do think people are creating stuff like that. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that you're working off influences. You know, you're taking it and you're making it your own. And, I can see where you're doing a riff and you're coming up with lyrics and stuff like that. And sometimes they even think they kind of write themselves.
Influence is one thing. Blatant ripping off of intellectual property is a total different.
Now, yeah, and I'm not talking about, you know, plagiarizing. I'm just talking about influences.
Yeah, I know. It's a gray area, extremely gray area, but... Yeah, you know, I mean, back in the old days, it just happened, you know, it just happened a lot, you know. So, well, Rich Buckler, you know, in comics.
You know. It all goes back to Rich Buckler.
We'll go back to Rich Buckler. Go back a couple episodes and you can hear about him more in depth.
Yeah, well, we talked about it before, and with great fondness, too, you know.
Yeah, he was fun. His Deathlock would look pretty original, though.
Yeah.
Do you know Deathlock is now on X-Force?
No.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I assume it's Deathlock. Sure as hell it looks like Deathlock. But,
well, he was on that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. cartoon or TV show, I think, I'm told.
Yeah. I wish they would have done a better job on the prosthetics for that one.
Wasn't he in the future, though? Wasn't Deathlock?
No, he was before they went into the future. The way they did Deathlock on S.H.I.E.L.D. was creative but a cop-out. They showed an X-ray of the guy's body, and it was the Deathlock. You know, he looked like Deathlock. But when they showed the actor, he looked like a normal person. So, you know, like I said... Creative, but a cop-out. You know, I really wish I could have gotten to see, like, you know, some prosthetics over the face on the show or something like that.
But wasn't in the comic book? Was that in the future?
No, the Deathlock comic?
Yeah.
No, Deathlock fought a lot of different characters. He fought Ghost Rider, Spider-Man, all kinds of people. Now I know that it was a couple different. There was a couple different variations of the Deathlok character over the years, but I don't remember him. Like, I don't think he was like a time travel character that came back or anything like that.
I never read it. I just remember seeing that. I found for a dollar at Wilson's one time, Al and I got the first of Deathlok. I've just never read it. But as a kid, I'd see it in, you know, Marvel advertisements. I'd see the comic. I knew I was familiar with the character, but Al, was Deathlok originally? Was he from the future?
Yeah, he was original.
No, but was he a character, man?
You know, I mean, from what I can remember, he looked cool. It was action. It was about the same time as Master of Kung Fu.
Right, you know. But no, was he situated in the future or was it present day?
I think it was present day.
Okay, so I'm wrong.
Maybe it was a little bit in the future, but I'm pretty sure it was kind of, you know, I don't remember. But we'll look it up and we'll find out.
Actually, I'm looking at it right now. The original Deathlok character, fatally injured, is reanimated in a post-apocalyptic future.
He was RoboCop.
Originally, the given date for that was 1990.
Ooh.
Oh, so it was in the future, yeah.
Of course, you know, we're also looking at, like, this was published back in, what, 1974 through 76 for the original character in Amazing Tales.
I remember 74 is when it started.
Yeah, so
He was the original RoboCop.
Yeah. He was. There's a couple different incarnations of Deathlok that they're talking about here. So, of course, let's see. Deathlok Prime? The hell is Deathlok Prime? Okay. An alternate future Deathlok Prime. Okay. That's fascinating. You know.
I'm surprised Marvel, but I'm not surprised because of lawsuits. They brought back Iron Fist and Power Man. They don't do anything with Master of Kung Fu, but I guess it's because of Bruce Lee estate probably sue him or something like that.
I don't see that. There's a lot of Bruce Lee ripoffs all over the place.
Yeah, well, Marvel's Disney, so they'll get hit hard, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I'm surprised they've never tried it before.
Well, they tried to bring Master Kung Fu back.
Theatrically.
Well,
they have Iron Fist and Power Man. You know, he was right there in that era. You know, you figure, bring them all back. You know, put them on TV or something.
That might be why they don't bring them back. They don't want to confuse the character branding. So, especially with Disney. Disney's real big on their character branding.
Yeah. I may be wrong, but I know Iron Fist had a really successful run. I don't know, 7-8 years ago, where they were pushing the tournaments, but I don't know who wrote those. There's a couple of different writers, but that was really successful. I remember Dallas bought one when I first met him, but I hear podcasts talk all the time. I don't remember Master Kung Fu, they tried to bring it back, but I don't think it really went anywhere.
No, those Paul Gulacy issues were really fun back in the back in the 70s. Paul Gulacy, Gene Day, Doug Mensch. Fun comics with Fu Manchu and all that stuff in there. It was good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, they'd probably get tagged with, like, I'm reading over it right now. Yeah, they'd probably get tagged with, like, cultural appropriation or racism or something like that. They probably wouldn't even hit the shelves and they'd be getting, you know, attacked by people about this stuff. Because, I mean, like, if you look at some of these names on here, this stuff would not fly these days.
Oh, some of the Asian names or something?
Yeah, like, you know, they named a character Fu Manchu. There's no way that would go over well right now.
Well, that's a copyrighted character.
Yeah, no, I realize that, but it's...
you think it would be wrong?
Oh, I'm not saying wrong or right, but I'm going to tell you right now.
Everybody will complain.
Listen, we had a conversation in my office yesterday morning and this is a true story. You can look this up online. The newest thing to get hit by the claims of being inappropriate and racist is the scene in Mary Poppins with the chimney sweeps.
Is there a blackface or something? They look like they're in blackface.
Bingo. Yeah. It's just soot, people. That's all it is. It's soot on their faces from the chimneys. But yeah, so, you know, in the day and age that we're in, you got to be careful of stuff like that. You know, bringing back a character like this would honestly not go over well in today's climate. So just keep it with, oh, hell, I mean, even Iron Fist, they had issues with that. Like, people were PO'd that it was, oh, look at this white guy doing kung fu. It's like, yeah, this white guy been doing kung fu since the 1970s here. Don't know much about it. It's cool, okay?
Yeah, it used to be that people would complain about, oh, this guy's pretending like he's Bruce Lee. He's not Bruce Lee. He's Bruce Lai or Bruce Lay.
Bruce Lai. Like, yeah, you know, just goes Bruce Lai. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, such is life. You know.
Hey, there's only one true kung fu master, and that's Bruce Leroy.
Bruce Leroy.
Bruce Leroy.
Come on, that was a fantastic movie. That is come on.
Was that Kung Fu? Was that Dynamite? What was it called? Black Dynamite?
Dolomite.
Return of the Dragon or something like that? Oh, crap. What was it called? They had the Shonuff, the Shogun of Harlem. Yeah. Oh, that was a great movie. Come on.
What was that other one? I'm going to get you, sucker. That was a good one, too, with Jim Brown and... I miss that stuff. Anyway,
good stuff.
God, but yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess. I mean, you're thinking that, you know, the Iron Fist did good, so they bring back the other one. But you're right. You're probably right. They probably think that's a little too appropriation of Asian, you know, culture or whatever.
The Last Dragon. That's what it was called. It was called The Last Dragon.
Oh, the Berry Gordy movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was in the 70s, right?
No,
1985.
Yeah.
Yep. God, I loved that movie growing up. Such an awesome movie.
You know, they were wanting to make a second one?
Really? Why didn't they?
Because I never saw the movie. I was in the Navy at that time, and I remember I was seeing it, and then I read an article, and they were basically talking about how Berry Gordy was trying to save his empire by going to movies, and it seemed like people liked the movie, but I looked it up and saw the guy ended up, the main actor, ended up being a dancer for Madonna on one of her tours.
Really?
Didn't look anything like the guy from the movie. He was, you know, he looked like Chris Tucker from The Fifth Element.
But, man, I don't know. I'm looking at him right now in photographs, and he's 50 years old. This man is in excellent shape.
Well, I mean, he was a dancer, but he had blonde hair and just looked kind of, you know, far out. Of course, yeah, I guess that was the work.
The guy that played Bruce Leroy?
No, the guy from The Last Dragon. The Berry Gordy film. The Last Dragon.
I thought that was the character he was talking about.
I never saw the movie. Yeah. Bruce Leroy was the guy in The Last Dragon?
It's a black guy.
Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, no, and I'm sitting there looking at pictures of him right now, and he looks awesome.
Okay, well...
he ain't aged a day.
But he was wanting, I guess, they were going to do another movie, and whatever happened, you know, the financing fell apart. And when I was looking this up, and I guess 2005, 2006, they were talking about he was still trying to pursue doing a second Last Dragon movie. So
I can definitely see him walking on the screen and doing another Last Dragon movie right now, because he looks like he's in awesome shape.
Was he doing kung fu in that movie? Was he doing all the martial arts stuff?
Yeah, he's doing martial arts.
What's the actor's name, by the way? I've never seen that movie.
I'm gonna slaughter the pronunciation of this name. I just want you to know that, okay? So, Tiamat Guerrero.
Okay.
But I mean, I'm telling you right now, I'm looking at a picture of this man right now, and he's 50 years old, and goddamn, I wish I looked like that when I was 50, because he looks like he's still in his 20s.
There you go.
Well, you know, he always stayed physical. Like I said, he was dancing for Madonna. It's a lot of work. So.
Yep.
So any more funny book talk?
If you guys don't mind, I got one more. Same day when I went to Wilson's and there's nothing in my box and I bought that issue of Action Comics, I also got this.
Mm. Conan the Barbarian.
Is that new?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, crap. That's a number one, too. Ooh.
From Marvel.
Oh, they're back.
Yeah. Dark Horse, you know, was doing the Conan books and Red Sonja and all this stuff, all the Howard books. This is kind of interesting. You know, it starts off with text, just like the movie, you know, introducing it. I don't know if you see, it has a two-page montage, and it's all the old work from Barry Smith and John Buscema, you know, kind of put in there.
Nice. Very nice.
Really graphic. And it starts off on a battlefield, shows Conan as a king. I liked it. A lot of bloodthirsty fighting. He's in the ring. And it has a feel for the 70s, but it's, you know, a little more sophisticated, you know, for the 90s. It's showing him fighting in the ring, chopping people's heads off. A lot of blood, a lot of guts. He ends up seeing this one woman that's waging on him. She's extremely hot. First, I thought it was Red Sonja with blonde hair. And then when it finishes, she goes to Conan and chases the other women away. And just to spoil it, she turned into a witch. Just like from that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, the first one, which really freaked me out when I saw it. And, sorry, I hear a phone. Anyway. What do you call it? But, it goes on. It's this whole thing about the witch. I found this extremely interesting and disturbing. And, he beats her back and she curses him. Then it shows up later and he's the king. You know, just like it always talked about in the novels. And at the very end, she turns up again. Oh, well, that's... I liked it. I haven't seen another one, because if I see another one, I'll buy it. But Marvel's even putting out omnibuses of the old work, or Barry Smith.
Can we just talk about who the writer is on this book for a second?
Yeah. Jason Aaron. You love
him. Yeah, baby. One of the best writers out there right now.
Well, I'm going to agree with you, because this was... it has a feel for the old Roy Thomas work. When I'm telling you this, I collected Conan when I was a kid. And when I went to college, that's when King Conan came out. So I was getting Conan monthly, and I was getting King Conan. I was getting everything that Conan... I was even getting the magazines, the Savage Sword of Conan and all this stuff. And it has the feel for it, but... Like I said, it's a little more sophisticated. The artist is Mahmud Asrar. Asrar? I don't know how you say it.
Yeah, Mahmud Asrar. And he is one of the co-creators of Dynamo 5, which, if you guys remember, way back was a series I was reading. Which I absolutely adored. It was the five children of the superhero that when their dad died, they suddenly inherited powers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's one of the co-creators for Dynamo 5. Dynamo 5. So, this has got a hell of a creative team on it.
Yeah, it's, like I said, it's strong. The story is strong. The artwork is just right up there with it. But it has the feel for those old Conan books that Marvel put out. Even though they're updated, and I've never seen that where it ties into Conan as a younger man and then Conan as the king all at once. Marvel, when they did it back in the day, they were completely separate.
But you know, think about it. Jason Aaron did, he did the Thor God Butcher series where he did a lot of that time hopping in those storylines. So he's almost perfectly prepared and experienced to write a story like this where you have, you know, the old Conan looking back into his past or, you know, things like that. This could be an amazing read because, like I said, Jason Aaron, the work he did on Thor, God Butcher, well, the Thor series in general, was outstanding. So, yeah, wow, I got to go get a copy of this one.
Yeah, I haven't seen the second one. Like I said, they're even using a recreation of the old Conan logo from the 70s, Conan the Barbarian. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I saw on Facebook people talking about, I guess it's an omnibus. And I don't like the cover to it, but they have a Barry Smith cover from the old comic, but it's a variant, a direct market variant cover. And I've heard some people say that they wanted to get the Barry Smith cover, but they couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
So that's disappointing, but the new cover for it is there, which I'm not a fan of.
No, I don't like that.
No. I bought the Barry Smith Conans when Dark Horse put them out in trades, and I was happy to get them. But those, they used computer coloring, and they overcolored, and they completely destroyed the line weight. They didn't put a black line over the top of them. And like, you know, especially the early issues, he's out in the snow all the time. And the artist used, I'm guessing, Photoshop and made all this fuzzy white stuff around it. And a lot of complaints about the colors are muddy. And again, you don't destroy the line work, and that's what they did. And there was some guy online that even posted examples of what he would have done. He sent them to Dark Horse to get them recolored, and they wouldn't touch it. So that's one thing I was interested in with the Barry Smith work at Marvel. If you got an omnibus, they'd also have the covers, which Dark Horse didn't. I guess they couldn't. And also, it would have better coloring, I would think.
Yeah, Marvel had that character for like, what, 30 years or something?
Yeah. I was shocked when Dark Horse got it. And like I say, Dark Horse did some really neat Conan monthly books. Or single issues. I thought they were fantastic, and they were taking chances. The stories were good, the artwork was good, and I think Jim Zub wrote them, and I think Amanda Connor drew a few issues, which I really liked, and Al, you and I talked about them on the show.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like I said, but Marvel got it back again. When I read Conan, like I said, I loved it. But when I was in college, my friend Britt was saying that Conan is one of those overworked characters where there's just so much you can do and they wouldn't stop. And even Gil Kane later that year said the same thing. He's never seen a more overworked character than Conan. And he was drawing them monthly sometimes. Like I said, I think that's one reason Marvel gave up. I think it wasn't selling that well and it was oversaturated. But, like I said, Dark Horse did a really nice job, and this one right here, it's breathed new life into an old piece that I love so much. So,
is that like brand new?
Yeah, it's brand new.
Well, hopefully they reprint some of the early issues. That would be nice.
Well, like I said, they have an omnibus of Barry Smith's work, so I think they're reprinting them, but it seems like they're going to be an expensive collection.
I'm surprised they didn't do like a True Believers number one with Conan.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah, well, it would be nice. It would be nice if DC, I mean, DC is kind of doing that stuff with those 50, with those 80 page giants or whatever, but it would be nice if they reprinted some of their early issues, you know, for a buck. Some of the classic Silver Age stuff. Even though people might not like it. Who knows?
I'd like it.
I wouldn't mind it. I'd like it.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, when is my opinion lined up with what what's good for sales?
Yeah, well, yeah. So, anything else?
I think I'm good.
Rook? All right. You got anything else, Rook?
I'm done.
Yeah.
I got a lot of catching up to do. There's a lot of crazy projects around here. The D&D campaign is at a big plot point twist, so I've been doing all kinds of crap for that. So,
huh? Oh, cool. All right.
Well, let's finish it up. Hey guys, thanks for trying this. It's good to see you.
Yes, see you guys.
All right.
It's great to have three of us back.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna, if this works out, we're gonna try to do some more. We'll get all four of us, which would have been fantastic.
Yeah. Sure.
So, all right. Well, that's it. Everybody, thanks for listening. If you get a chance, leave us a review on iTunes, please. Anyway.
For more.
And
if they're funny, I'll read them on the air.
Yeah, that's why has anybody written one? Anyway,
listen, you know, I'm just waiting for somebody to write something really stupid that I have to read on air. So
that'd be cool.
So yeah, we even want stupid ones. we have some, and thank you very much for all the people that did take the time to write one. I appreciate it. We all do, and they were very nice. But anyway, we want more. We're greedy that way. So anyway, thanks for listening. In the meantime,
read
more. Okay, comics. Let's do this. Al,
you and Rook are in harmony.
I'll say read. Al, you say more. Rook, you say comics. Ready?
Wait. How does it go? How does it go again?
Okay. I'll say read. Al, you say more. And Rook, you say comics.
Okay.
Ready? Read.
More.
Comics.
Was that hard? All right, see you guys.
We can make it more complicated.